What would be the reason for injuries in the gym and in general?
Well, reasons why, you know, I just think me watching athletes in a group work out together and they, unfortunately, though, play the comparison game and they're like, no, I'm strong, you know, and they start to, you know, joke around with each other and I'm stronger and I'm better. And that is always when I see more injuries, soft tissues, not necessarily emergent, but, you know, that's usually when they end up hurting themselves because they're trying to do better than John next to him.
Hi, Kathy. It's my pleasure to have you on Evidence Strong Show. If you could briefly introduce yourself, that would be awesome.
Hi, my name is Dr. Kathy Williams. I am a certified athletic trainer. I've been certified since 1999. I have my undergraduate degree in sports medicine. Along those lines, I ended up going for my master's in 2001 in college counseling. And I also decided that I wanted to get the NSCA's strength and conditioning certification, so the CSCS. So I've been certified since then. And that was back when you actually had to go to the site to go get tested. But, and then I've been working as an athletic trainer and then helped with some strength and conditioning programming throughout the years, worked in many different settings, gyms, clinics, and then I usually work with high school or collegiate athletes. And I got my doctorate in educational leadership, but I helped start different programs and I got a chance to create and start a human performance and a master's program in applied kinesiology. And I've done undergraduate health science programs and have always had strength and conditioning as a part of the coursework.
Amazing. So huge baseline of knowledge and experience. And today we will try to learn from you about emergencies in the gym. So what may happen in the gym in terms of emergencies?
I was looking through in the emergency department statistics for weightlifting injuries in the United States. Based on our information, estimated annual ED visits are anywhere from 20,000 to 30,000 weightlifting related injuries a year here in the US. And I know you had spoken about it previously on a podcast, but it's roughly like 2 to 4 injuries per 1,000 hours of training. A lot of times the age groups that get injured the most are adolescent males. 13 to 18 year olds are really the highest risk group, mainly due to, you know, technique errors, growth plate vulnerabilities. Adult males 18 to 30 were also the majority of injuries overall. I think, you know, that population obviously strives to, you know, push themselves. And at times, though, when they're trying to push themselves and you know, get stronger and develop or have better lifting techniques, instead, they actually have improper technique, right? They just try to lift too much weight too quickly. They drop weights. You could have a crushing injury, right? If you accidentally have two weights and your finger stuck in between them, overexertion or equipment failure, you know, if they don't have the proper spotting as well. Some of the common injuries, soft tissue injuries for sure, strains, sprains. I've had a lot of people, you know, oh, I hurt my shoulder. I was, you know, racking the barbell and I went too far back. And you could have back injuries. Back injuries are quite common. Shoulder injuries, hand and finger trauma. That's, you know, really more from like dropping weights or them getting pinched. And then more serious ones, but definitely not as common. I've seen pectoral tears. I've seen bicep tears. People could have spinal injuries or some type of fracture. So those are some of the more common things I think that most everybody sees. The other end of it is now, okay, say this just, you know, some type of injury happens. And so obviously if that is a case where you think somebody is severely injured, you would want to make sure they stop the activity immediately. You want to prevent any further damage from happening in any way, shape, or form. You want to keep the athlete calm, still. We could always give it more as like an example, a squat, and they have too much valgus, knee valgus. And so they are getting some knee pain. You know, you'd want to ask them like, okay, let's stop the exercise. You know, where is the pain? If they notice something that they quickly identify something's wrong, you could see them, you know, jerk or have a moment of pain. Where is it? Did you hear a pop, a snap? We've all seen those gory videos of dislocations. You know how they have, there's a doctor I follow that's fun on Instagram, but he always is assessing like, hey, this is, you know, what the exercise was. And then this is the injury that resulted from it. And, you know, and why did it happen? And so obviously more like the snatch, I would think some of the clean and jerk, some of the more explosive, right, movements would be the ones that I think we've seen somebody dislocate a shoulder, elbow. So you would just want to make sure, like, if something like this did happen, you know, can they move the limb? Can they even bear weight if it's a lower body injury? You know, or the number one thing, besides getting them to stop the activity and ask them how they are, you'd really want to make sure if anyone has numbness, tingling, or any type of deformity, right? So deformity obviously is a huge red flag. Like, they're going to have to go to the emergency room. Numbness and tingling, though, anything to do with nerves is always a little bit concerning, is very concerning, actually. So you're just concerned, like, did something happen in central C-spine? Do we have to worry about there's some type of nerve compression based off of either a dislocation or maybe even like a torn muscle that can affect it? If there's any signs of serious injury, you know, don't move the athlete unnecessarily. We could have, you know, make sure you seek emergency help right away. You want to call personnel. Depending on the injury, if you have it, if for soft tissue and acute injuries, we could always use the RICE method that they call it. So rest, ice, compression, elevation, immobilizing and avoiding movement, managing pain and swelling. You know, you could always have people take ibuprofen or those non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. They can always help. Avoiding any type of heat and massage in the first 48 hours right after someone gets injured is usually the best case. And then just making sure that you're keeping an eye on your athlete, you know, watching for increased pain, swelling. If they have changes in sensation, you definitely want to, you know, be on alert and then see if you need to refer or not. If you had shoulder dislocation, or say someone does dislocate their elbow or even their elbow, you don't want to try to relocate it, right? You don't want to try to actually put the joint back in unless you're trained to do so. But the biggest thing is immobilizing and then being able to transport them to the ER. And then after they're there, right, they'll get an x-ray, they'll reduce the joint for them, and then they'll have to have some type of rehab with a physiotherapist or a PT. But immobilizing could even be the ground. So if someone is like their, you know, joint shoulder came out anteriorly, you know, if you had to, you could like lay them down if they feel more comfortable and just have it against the ground. There's different splints that people could have that are actually pretty easy to use. You could have arm slings if it was, you know, dislocated and their arm was actually more down in front of their body. So there's a few different things. It'd be nice to have. I would suggest that everybody should have some type of basic first aid course. And then I'm hoping that all strength coaches also get CPR and AED certified for sure. They've found that there's actually a pretty high correlation to more cardiovascular incidents at times during strength training sessions than there always is necessarily in practice.
Coaches, how can they prepare and what should they have in the gym, or ideally what would be in the gym for them to use in case of emergency?
If they wanted to, they could have an arm sling if something does happen, right, to someone's shoulder, elbow. A SAM splint, it's called. A SAM splint is actually this, like, it's somewhat mobile, comes wrapped up in like a little cylinder, and then you can unwrap it. And you could have, the other thing would be good to have is ACE wraps. ACE wraps for compression, right? So someone like sprains their ankle or did something to their knee, they could apply those. But the ACE wrap goes along with that SAM splint, and it can help you splint an injury if you needed to. I would always think being able to, if you think it's a really severe, like say they, you know, go unconscious because their blood pressure spiked, it's always good to try to take vitals if the coach is capable. So if you're trained in first aid and you will do that, a pulse oximeter is the most simplest thing that you can use. I know a lot of people during the pandemic got comfortable with those, and it's just this little tiny device. It goes on your finger and it measures your blood oxygen levels and then your pulse. So then at least you can know if they have a high pulse rate or low, or, you know, how is the person feeling. If they feel comfortable, they could have even just the automatic now blood pressure cuffs that you could just put on somebody and you just got to press a button, and at least it'll tell you the readout of what their blood pressure is. Having access to ice bags, also an AED, a first aid kit for any type of wounds. If they, you know, I know some people used to like scrape that bar along their shins and then they're bleeding at the end when they're trying to stay close to the body. But, you know, having a towel, just simple things that you could use that you could help to, like, some type of like a wound cleanser spray. Like they say, don't use like peroxide anymore, and like make sure it's some type of a wound cleanser. Sterile gauze, band-aids, those type of just basic supplies can really help you. Roller gauze could also be another good one to have in case of any type of like blood. So basically any type of dislocation, if something happens and you notice that a joint came out, very first thing is you're going to make sure that they stay splinted or don't move. You call for help, your emergency personnel. And then there's little things that you could try to do. Sometimes people start to feel like they go numb and tingly. There's little things where you can like actually even press on the fingertips, and it's called capillary refill. And you could see their, you know, their fingers go white and then turn back to pink, then you could tell, like, okay, they're getting good blood flow. If they're not getting good blood flow, then you know that's even more of an emergency because something, a blood vessel could be getting occluded. Same thing neurologically, you want to make sure they can still feel all right. So trying to do those. Any type of fracture, wrist, arm, leg, same things going with a dislocation. You're definitely going to want to splint it in any way you can. And then just avoid movement, and you have to call the EMS because really they're going to need some type of imaging, x-ray. You know, this is when people either get casted. So depending on any type of fracture and where that would be, lower body versus upper body, you know, sometimes it's even nice just to have crutches at your gym. I don't know if everybody necessarily has those, but it's been kind of, you know, comes in handy. Back injuries and spasms, those can be tough. When you really start to spasm up, I'm sure you've seen it before as well, but, you know, right away, non-weight bearing's probably best. Sometimes even laying flat on their back isn't great. They may have to actually elevate their legs a little bit to try to take some pressure off that low back. If they spasm, though, you know, they're probably going to either have to, like, lay down or be on their side. And then this is when you could try to ice and then give them those NSAIDs or some type of ibuprofen to help reduce the pain. And then the ice will really, you know, help actually try to slow nerve conduction and hopefully slow those spasms down. Those are usually those, that's tough, right? Because then as soon as they get up to move, they'll start to spasm some again. But this is when it's depending on how, you know, I guess bad the reaction is. Either you'd have to put them on a spine board or on a gurney and they would have to wheel them out, or hopefully you could get them to calm down and, you know, within 20, 30 minutes, then they can walk out and get checked. But
would you allow the athlete in this situation go back to training session, or is the end of the story, they have to be medically checked before they can come back?
I would, if it's significant enough where they are spasming so bad that they can't continue, then they may need to get checked by a medical professional or an athletic trainer or physiotherapist or someone that knows, like, some special tests and can try to follow them. You have to be careful because what the body likes to do is it goes into a pain spasm cycle. And so we try to break that when there's some type of injury. And the body's extremely intelligent. So say, you know, like when you sprain your ankle, the first thing that happens is it hurts and you don't want to move it, right? And then it starts to swell. And, you know, the body knows that if you felt good, right, you would start to walk on it and use it. And it can't. It's injured. So you have that pain spasming as a protection for you, for your actual joint. Even though we don't enjoy it, our body's trying to tell us something, right? And then the swelling comes in. It's extremely hard to obviously have good range of motion with the swelling, but it's trying to help you heal. And, it, you know, it's just smart. So there's times where, like, if you maybe have, like, a hairline fracture or something, I've had, or it's called, like, an osteochondral defect in their femur. And I had an athlete that was constantly having chronically tight hamstrings. And then he's always thought he was pulling his hamstrings. And every time he's trying to work out, and come to find out, his tight hamstrings were tightening up because it was his body was trying to, I think, in a way, not use as much because he actually had these OCD lesions. So it's pretty smart, but you got to pay attention and just make sure you know, like, there's no other underlying cause. And that's the part that can get dicey. You know, it's a little bit difficult to, without having some experience and watching people. I had another kid, same thing. They thought he was chronically having hamstring strains and trying to work out, and he was losing all of his strength. And really, when you take a look, you know, I highly suggest that if you are training somebody and you notice they have a huge deficit from one side to the other. So, like, if you look at someone bilaterally and you're looking at both of their legs, if the right leg all of a sudden looks like the circumference of the actual muscle mass of the thigh is, you know, significantly reduced compared to the left leg, you need to know then there had to have been an injury. There's something happening. And that's always my number one way to realize there's another underlying injury. Something must have happened. In this athlete's case that I was working with, I found out he was ACL deficient and we never knew it. I guess a year before he'd hurt his knee, you know, said it hurt, but I'd only started seeing him a year later and just kept talking about these chronic hamstrings. And the next thing you know, we get him an MRI and that's why. So some of the more emergent things are easier almost to take care of because you know, like, you're going to have to stop and go get looked at by a physician, where some of these, like, more, I guess, low level injury, you know, you got to try to may also, like, warrant some further looks, I guess I'd say.
What would be the reason for injuries in the gym and in general?
Well, reasons why men are boys being boys. I'm joking. I'm not only picking on them. I know women, we can get the same thing. But, you know, I just think me watching athletes in a group work out together and they unfortunately, though, play the comparison game and they're like, no, I'm strong, you know, and they start to, you know, joke around with each other and I'm stronger and I'm better. And that is always when I see more injuries, soft tissues, not necessarily emergent, but you know, that's usually when they end up hurting themselves because they're trying to do better than John next to him. He's like, but look at what I put up. And I'm like, it doesn't matter. It hurts you. So I feel like that alone is a big thing. And usually not doing it with correct form on top of it all. So not only are they not doing good form, and then they're trying to increase their, you know, velocity and load. And it responds very poorly in their body, as they usually find out. But that
poor form and ego.
Right. Oh, I see it all the time. I'm like, all right. Okay, guys.
Yeah, the problem, I think the biggest problem is that where people are the most prone to ego lifting is also the age when they are in their prime physically. So you want them to be pushing, you want them to be getting better because that's the best time to gain. But it's also the worst time to gain because they have very low perceived risk. They think they are invincible and, you know, it has pluses, but you as a coach have to really pay attention and know your athletes.
Yeah, especially higher level, really, you know, self-motivated, driven athletes. I mean, those are ones that, like, you have to kind of just actually try to, you know, like you said, slow them down because they will just keep going. I have so many overuse injuries right now. And a lot of it has to do with just overtraining. And what's happening is there's too many groups of us now. It's like too many cooks in the kitchen, I'm calling it. So, like, you know, you have your strength coach, and then you have your sport coach, and then you have some, you know, other
coach,
right, speed coach, and then you have some other individual that, you know, Johnny's dad said is great. And so they're going to go to that, you know, and now next thing I find out, like, I think they're just going to a practice and doing their workouts with, you know, their strength coach. And the next thing I know, they're actually doing 4 more hours of, you know, some type of exertion or exertional exercise and, you know, trying to teach them about, like, periodization and, like, more does not always mean better is that leads more to injuries than I feel like almost anything else that we've done. But I've really been encountering that, especially now with the rise of, I'm super excited for our profession. I'm so glad that, you know, strength and conditioning specialists are, you know, growing overall. And our knowledge base is growing, but now just making sure, you know, we're all kind of on the same page with also their sport coaches or speed coach, you know, it's kind of having that network of everybody working together.
I want us to cover maybe the most scary thing in the gym that can happen, which is blackout / concussion. So something happened and you either had an athlete accept a hit to the head or they just dropped on the floor and they are unconscious, or they are conscious but they're confused, don't know where they are, and so on. So what would you have to say?
Oh yeah, that would obviously be the scariest thing that could happen. So if someone passes out, this is tough, like as a strength coach, right? Because I know multiple people, like if you rest the bar too high, right, you end up like kind of occluding that carotid artery and then you end up losing consciousness because of that. Usually, though, what's going to happen, right, is they fall or they go unconscious. And then after their body regulates, they will, you know, come back to us and be all right. But if they go unconscious and never regain consciousness, right, so as soon as you're unconscious, it's a medical emergency. So you'd want to make sure you call emergency personnel first. I would always suggest to make sure that this is when you go get your AED and then hopefully have CPR skills, not saying that you would need it, but just always making sure that you have the supplies needed around you. And then this is when you need to check vitals. This is why it's good for people to have those certifications and know, like, okay, how can I check vitals? You know, can you check the carotid brachial arteries just to make sure that their pulse is okay? Are they breathing? Are you going to look, listen, and feel, I call it, so you can like tip their head back a little bit and put your ear and feel like if their breath is hitting your face, you're looking at their chest to see if it's rising. A lot of times I'll look for the ribs if they fall forward. As long as I see their ribs moving, I always feel better. Like when I have to run out, like especially like in American football, I'm like, okay, I see their ribs moving, I feel better. But then, so you'd want to make sure if they're unconscious, right, just trying to check all of those things. And really the most thing you could do is just monitor. If it is more a head related injury, so a lot of times if you get hit in the head, this part is not going to be actually necessarily backed by research. So I will apologize now, but I always feel better if someone gets hit in the head and I see it swell out. Because say you got hit with like a weight and you start to swell and you all of a sudden have this huge like hematoma on your head. Usually what that means is that your gall has done the job it's supposed to, right? It kind of dissipated those forces, took it, and then the skin just has like an injury to it. But usually it doesn't mean that your brain did. And so, but if they pass out or fall and they happen to like hit, you know, whack their head back and they get a coup or counter coup type concussion, then this is when right their brain moved and kind of hit the front and back of inside that skull, and now the brain is bruised. That is obviously more concerning. A lot of times people can still talk to you, but this is when you would still want to refer and make sure you get them looked at. But if a lot of times people get in the head and they're still conscious, but they don't feel right, right? You could just all of a sudden start to tell that they're off. If they start to, they should most likely they have a headache. Then I always try to make sure that this is why people, when you have them follow your finger, you're trying to watch their eye tracking to see if they get nystagmus, it's called. And it's, you know, it's when your eyes will bounce or jump a little bit while they're trying to follow. So like your eye tracking looks off. And so that's why I'll go in all these different directions. So a lot of times though, like for somebody like in my field, I would test all of your cranial nerves. So I have them stick their tongue out. I have them, you know, side eyes is checking abducens, and you have them smile and frown and we look at all that. But for the coach who, there is some like concussion certifications, usually they have to have some type of working knowledge a lot of times. I know in some of like, especially like the NCAA schools, if they are complaining though about really bad headache, if they start to vomit, immediately get them to the ER because we're worried about a subdural hematoma or epidural, either one. But yeah, if they start to want to vomit, they can't right away, like light bothers them. They can't walk straight in a line. Sometimes they're super, you know, they're very discombobulated. They have no balance. And so that's why people check their balance. And, you know, it's kind of like the breathalyzer test, I guess, that they joke around. But you could have people try to walk in a straight line and they can't. Any of those things, when they have a combination of, you know, I would say three or more of those type of symptoms, they definitely need to go to the hospital and just get checked out. But especially if they start to like get sick right away or they're unconscious for a long period of time, just as a strength and conditioning coach, you know, you would just want to make sure that you're doing the best thing for your athlete. And so those times can be scary. And a lot of times they are get combative, you know, and they'll say, no, look, I'm fine. I can keep going. The last thing you want to do that if you think there's some type of bruise that's happened to the brain, right? The small little brain bleeds. And the last thing you want to do is then increase that intrathecal pressure, right? And then all of a sudden have this, you know, try to lift something heavy and all of a sudden your, you know, BP is like 280 over 200 and that would just make it that much worse, right? That's definitely the worst thing that we could do for somebody. So I would have them sit down, stop activity right away, and then just be monitored.
So would you say concussion, you sit the athlete, if they look concussed, you send them off immediately, but if they look fine, you let them sit and see how they feel. Still don't let them go back to the activity, but maybe see how they go and whether to send them off to the ER or not.
The biggest thing is just making sure you don't leave them alone. I've seen, and so say you're training a large group of athletes at one time and someone gets injured and it's really easy for, we'll say once again, Johnny gets injured. He, you know, he hit his head really bad or, you know, and sometimes it, like the hit or whatever happens to him looks really benign. It doesn't look like it would be that bad, but something happened, obviously, brain contusion wise. And so they will go off and say, I just don't feel great. So they'll leave and they'll go off on their own or say, hey, I'm just going to go to the restroom or I'm going to go to the bathroom. And sometimes that's the worst things that can happen because I've had athletes, you know, over the years where I've seen people where they've gone and then they've like passed out in the bathroom or in the shower. And it's because they were left alone. So we make sure that someone stays with them all the time and they're monitored until you can get them with either their parent or, you know, be seen at an emergency department or a physician. But definitely keep an eye on them and just wait to see like how they do. They'll be super reactive to, you know, bright lights can bother them. All of a sudden, like they can't read, trying to focus to read something really hurts their head. They can't read things well. They can't remember, right? There's times where people can't remember what just happened. And so those are the ones that I always, you know, take a lot more care with. A lot of times it is, you know, the brain will heal on its own. But the worst thing I think you could do as a strength and conditioning coach is to see somebody where it looks like, you know, they're off, as they say, right? Something's not right with the kid, and allow them to go back. Anytime you think it is a concussion-based head injury, I just would not mess with that until you know for sure, like, what's going on, and keep monitoring them.
We will just carry on this green pathway, because I want to ask about other red flags. So what coaches should really pay attention to?
Okay. So for concussion stuff or just in general?
No, in general, if the gym is not prepared, if a person as a coach is not prepared, these are the things they really have to pay attention.
So I think, as you know, a coach, when you're honestly some of the easiest things really to I think that to take notice of is to make sure that your area is like clean or picked up or full of, like, it doesn't have all these hazards, right? So say you're doing a bunch of weightlifting sessions, or just making sure that, like, you're picking the weights up, there's not a chance to, like, trip over something because someone left a 45 pound weight behind you, or you had your feet on the two plates and then you didn't move it for later, and then, you know, you fall and you hit your head on that, right? So just picking up and having a good workout space in general is always good. And then while somebody is trying to do a workout, like, if obviously, you know, something dislocates, you see like a bone visibly out of place, that's obviously a huge red flag. Any type of loss of movement or sensation, if something happens and they're lifting, then all of a sudden, you know, if someone can't feel the right side of their body, or all of a sudden, you know, they can't use their joint the same way they could beforehand, immediately pause and stop and try to get them some help. Severe swelling or bruising right after a lift, if they did something to a joint and they already start to swell, like, within minutes, that's probably a severe injury, and then they need to stop immediately. And then fainting, you know, shock or breathing difficulties, you're always worried if they do faint, or if they have a bad enough injury, honestly, like, they can actually go into shock. And so shock is another thing that you'd want to try to keep track of, where they have, like, the sweating, they may have a really high pulse rate, they'll get tachycardia maybe, you know, and so you really want to try to monitor them. And people like that, that you think maybe have an injury, and all of a sudden they're like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be sick, and I don't feel right, and you could see the perspiration, you know, those are the ones that, if when you go to treat for shock, you could have them lay down, you could have them, you raise their legs up, you raise their feet up, so you try to get as much blood to stay near the heart and the internal organs as possible. Sometimes they think they're cold, you could cover them with a blanket and just, you know, try to reassure them. And then it's always good to continue to talk to and monitor your athlete or patient if that's the case. When you have those times that someone really has an issue and they're, you know, something's wrong, right? They have an emergent issue. Just trying to tell them, like, you're okay isn't probably going to help, because they know they don't feel right. They know something's seriously wrong, and that's almost placating them. And so I always encourage people to use that as a time to gain information from them. And honestly, if you're going to go to the hospital, things that you could ask is like, okay, when's the last time, like, you ate or drank anything? If you think, like, they're going to need a surgery, what's, you know, are you allergic to anything? Is your parents close by? What is the hospital you like to use? I mean, there's so many questions, valuable questions that you could ask and gain information from, and then help list the paramedics or when people come to either get the person or say you have to transport them and hand them off. At least you'd know, like, hey, they have allergies. Maybe they have asthma. Maybe they have diabetes. You know, maybe they have a pacemaker. You know, you just never know. Everybody has different health issues. So using that time to try to kind of keep them, especially if they look like they're kind of in between consciousness, I'm always trying to keep them awake and keep them talking until medical personnel arrive, especially with, like, the faint. And then vomiting or confusion right after a head injury or something happened, a heavy lift. And if, you know, that's the case, something else is going on. So I would be, or they, you know, they got hit in the head with a weight, or they racked wrong in their neck. I mean, if you immediately have central C-spine pain, or you have numbness and tingling down, you know, an arm or both arms, bilaterally is more of the worst case scenario, I would say, then you've got to stop all things. And that would make sure that they kind of just stay aligned, because I know people won't always mean to know the spinal restriction movement techniques, but make sure that they're just not moving and try to call for help. Those would be some of the real big ones that I could think of off the top of my head. If you are somebody that is like, I cannot handle if I see something out of place, right? Like, if they saw a dislocation, like, I can't handle it. My biggest suggestion is to take a towel and cover it. And cover, so they could still stay stabilized, right? So you need to, like, splint or make sure they're not going to move it. but then cover it. So then UCAS will be there for that person and talk to them, and they don't have to see it anymore and see like maybe what the injury looks like. Cause a lot of times that's the other part, is sometimes I try to hide it. So then they don't, you know, freak out more or get really upset. But that can also help. A lot of times if someone tells me they heard a pop or felt a pop or a crack, I usually know then either maybe a ligament has completely torn, or maybe their patella like subluxed or dislocated, or you know, something else happened in the body. So usually that's kind of a sign that something a little bit more severe may or may not have happened. And just asking those good questions and then assessing them, you know, where is the pain? Usually you know it's there. A lot of times the coaches are with them, I would think, if they had some type of, you know, mechanism of injury, but and just trying to keep them calm as, you know, as much as they can. But can they bear weight? Can they move the limb? And like I said, always ask about numbness and tingling, because if it's nerve related, you definitely want to make sure that you send right away. And then, like we said, soft tissue wise, that's usually a little bit easier to handle. Soft tissue and like wound care, a first aid kit would still be great. But honestly, the ice, the compression, having those ACE wraps, trying to stop the swelling, you know, elevate the body part if you can above the heart. And then, you know, just managing the pain and swelling, and then trying to see, you know, if someone can't, you know, if say it was an ankle and they did something to it and then you couldn't take more than a few steps or bear weight on it, you know, even within like 30 minutes, like you probably should go get an x-ray, right? That's not normal. And so there's certain ones. A lot of times there's those like Ottawa. I like those Ottawa ankle rules and C-spine rules. They came out of Canada and they have these really helpful techniques that tell you like, okay, if your patient can do, you know, X, Y, and Z or have pain in certain areas, this is when you should get an x-ray and this is when, you know, you can wait. And those are always kind of helpful to look at, to use, but especially if they can't bear weight or not feel the same sensation. But bilaterally, always make sure you also like look at both sides, like I said, because sometimes people may have strange, actually normal deformities or odd things on their body, but it's that's their regular. And I don't know like how many strength and conditioning specialists, like how, you know, to truly spot right if you're going heavy, you're supposed to have one on like either side. Like, do they usually have that? Can they use other athletes? Like, you know, I don't know how often everyone has that luxury, I guess, at times when they're training people, but it's definitely
one of the things you can do. It's if you don't have spotters, then you can use safe quad rocks and around the barriers where you can't go lower than the barrier. So you can modify your training to not do heavy single when you have no one to spot you. You can't do it safe. In weightlifting gyms, I think the athletes are taught or they have to learn how to drop the weight safely. Because in snatch and clean and jerk, you can't have spotters as
Right. Easily
as for back squat, for example. So you have to learn how to remove yourself from under the bar, wherever it is, it might be. So that's a skill you may consider too, or have spotters, or not go as heavy as your maximum.
Now that you say that, that's right. We had our squat rack, and thank God we at least had the bottom barriers in, and this kid was squatting, one of my students, and I just look over and I'm like, oh my gosh, he was pinned under that, but thank God it caught it, because he just collapsed under that, and I was like, oh, whatever. They were all in the classroom trying to learn, and I used to have a spot rack in there. But yes, thank God for those.
Yeah, they are good. Useful. All right, we have two more questions to finish. So the first one is, what is your favorite lift?
I am just the standard back squat girl. I love it. I tried the front squat. I've tried the other things. That's my favorite.
Now, where people can find you if they want to follow, maybe get in touch or see what you're up to. Yeah, how you work and so on.
Yeah, so probably the easiest way to find me is on LinkedIn. I'm just under Kathy Williams as my name. I'm listed as the Director of Clinical Education, Head Athletic Trainer for Pinecrest Physical Therapy here in Miami, Florida. Might be the easiest. Or if someone wanted to reach out, my email is kpomicht@gmail.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.